Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Listen to me. Rich people think differently. So what I'm going to put in your head today is a rich people concept so you can get to understand it. The only difference between successful people and not is just how they think. Rich people think different. Quit letting people tell you got to get qualified in another program. You don't need another program to be successful. You need to change the way you think. So here's the deal. The problem with becoming a millionaire is that when you decide that you want to be a millionaire, you immediately start thinking, how can I become a millionaire? Well, that thought don't just pop into your head, so you get frustrated and you don't become a millionaire. And you start creating stuff like, well, I guess this wasn't the Lord's will, or as soon as I think of how I'm going to make a million. You can't think of how to make $1 million. Stop. Do you know if you knew how to make $1 million, what's the day, Tuesday? Wouldn't you make it by Friday? Wouldn't not you make it by Friday? But suppose I told you how you can become a millionaire with what you have. Because here's the deal. All of you have everything it takes to become rich. You just don't believe it. Now, if you can develop this theory that I'm about to share with you, I have the way for you to be rich. This is it. First of all of you have a gift. God gave it to you when he created you. God never created a single soul without giving them a gift. That's the God that created you. He's a very smart God. Here's the cold thing. When he made you, he put the gift inside of you. He didn't hide it under the ocean. It ain't on the mountain nowhere. It ain't under no rocks. You ain't got to go drilling. God put what you needed inside of you at birth. All of you have a gift. But you have got to do your gift, the thing God gave you at birth to do. It is the thing that you do the absolute best with the least amount of effort. That's your gift. Anything else you're doing, you're wasting your time. Do you hear me? You're wasting your time. If when the alarm clock goes off in the morning and it makes you sick every morning that alarm go off, it's because you ain't doing your gift. You're going against what God created you to be. Do most of you know what your gift is? Who in here doesn't know their gift yet? Okay, let me tell you what you do. Go home today. Don't talk to nobody. Sit down and have one conversation with yourself. What is the thing that I do the absolute best with the least amount of effort? This ain't going to take you long. You old enough, you grown. Write it down. I don't care if it's networking. I don't care if it's babysitting. I don't care if it's doing color. I don't care if it's painting. Whatever it is, it's what you do. Sing it. Whatever you do the best, write it down. That's your gift. That's it. You ain't got to go asking a bunch of people. They've been telling you your whole life. You know, you ever have people call you with their problems? They always call you with your problems because you gifted at it. But you didn't know how to identify it. If you identify your gift. Now, let me ask you this question. This thing that you're gifted at, if you did it for somebody, do you think somebody would pay you $10 for your gift? Just $10. Could you babysit for $10? Could you cut somebody's hair for $10? Could you cut their grass for $10? Could you make them a chicken dinner for $10? Could you do something for $10? Everybody, don't you have something somebody would give you $10 for? Okay, now, once you have something that somebody's willing to pay you $10 for, this is how this works. It's called the multiples of 10. See, you don't have to figure out how to be a millionaire. You just got to figure out the thing that makes you $10. So now here we go. You do it and you make $10. Soon as they pay you the 10, go do it 10 more times. Whatever it was. Watch some more kids 10 more times. Get another 10. You got $100. When you get $100, whatever you did to make that $100, listen to me, do it 10 more times. You ain't got to get tricky with it. Just do it 10 more times. You'd have made $1,000. Whatever you did to make the $1,000, don't get smart. Stay stupid now. Do it 10 more times. You have now made $10,000. Hold up. Now we finna grow a little bit, but guess what you got to do to grow? You just got to do some more. Whatever you made $10,000 doing, I need you to do it 10 more times. What you tripping for? If you do it 10 more times, you got $100,000. Now, you might have to hire some people to make this happen. You got to figure that part out. But all you got to do is do what you did for $10. Once you make $100,000, uh-oh, if you just do it 10 more times.
All right, today's It's My House. We're going to take off. From yesterday, today's podcast is titled, at least the jump-off title is, Backyard Innovations Times 10 Backyards. Everybody, either you have a backyard or you know somebody that has a backyard, and there's a lot of innovation that can go on or does go on in backyards. Everybody from the late Steve Jobs and Wozniak, his partner's still there. I consider Wozniak, Apple was actually, in my opinion, you can disagree, was Apple. Wozniak was Apple, but Steve Jobs, and I would say that there's a concept called sizzling steak. Wozniak was the steak. He was Apple. However, Steve Jobs was the sizzle that sold the steak. But I think they started in their garage. There's a bunch of people who started out of their garage or kitchen table or whatever. There's a guy about 2 hours away from me in Central Florida. He was going to throw. He was trying to get rid of a. some scrap metal or whatever, but the junkyard wouldn't take it because it had more fiberglass in it. So he bought it back home, and his wife said, "I thought you were getting rid of that." He said, "No, it's too much fiberglass. He wouldn't take it." So what he did in his backyard, and this guy's name is Steve Shives, Steve, since he couldn't get rid of it at the dump, okay, it was rejected at the dump. What he did was he was a handyman, and he took whatever it was, and he converted it into a camper, and he put it up on eBay for sale, and it sold quickly, right on eBay. So soon after that sale, somebody said, "Well, do you have another one?" And he said, "Well, no, but now the person asked, well, could you make another one?" So he made another one. And then somebody actually sold that. Long story short, what was rejected from the dump, and he had to bring it back home, he converted into a camper, a very affordable camper, and he started a company out of his backyard called Runaway Campers and became a millionaire. That's about 12. So we're trying to get him on the podcast live stream here. So that's what we're going to jump off with, backyard innovations. So some of you guys have backyard innovations. And, we're going to get you now. Anyway, we're going to top off our morning, morning motivation with Black and Blue. right. We had to get the blood flowing this morning. Now, we're working. I've located and I play both of them. Not play both of them, but I listen to both of them. They're good. Land of Confusion by Disturbed and, of course, by Genesis. I've got somebody working to get that so we can upload it to my system here so you guys can hear it. So that is coming. All right. Now, anyway, our jump off for today is Backyard Innovations, Thompson. I played the Steve Harvey piece, 10 by 10, because many people, now a lot of people who invent stuff, or what do you might call it, make stuff in their backyard, kitchen table, or whatever. A lot of them just do it for self-use, just like the Steve Sharp, you know, thing. This guy was trying to throw away something, and the dump wouldn't take it because it had too much fiberglass in it. So he brought it back home, and he said, well, let me, because he was a handyman. That's what he was doing. He's CEO of his runaway campers now. But he brought it back home and said, well, let me take what the junkyard rejected and let me see what kind of useful thing I can make out of it. And he made a camper, sort of like a teardrop, but it's a different design. And he put it up on eBay, and it sold. Now, that for him, that would have been the end of it. But somebody asked, well, could you make another one? And he made another one, and he kept on getting requests. And then now it's turned into $1 million enterprise. So there are a lot of stories like that. So hopefully on today's podcast, and the reason why I played the Steve Harvey piece, 10 by 10, because really you can just take something simple. We did a story on here about a month ago about a woman named Mignon Francois, who's a mother of seven children. Her lights were cut off. Her electricity was cut off. She only had $5 to feed her family that day, you know, plus she was married. So how can you feed, nine people off of five? She found a way to do it. But she turned that $5 into $60, same when a real estate agent came by. I'm abbreviating the story. Then she turned it into $600. Then she just kept on doing, multiplying it. And it's, this all started with, now you take the cupcake lady, Mignon Francois, in the name of her business called The Cupcake Collection. You can find her online. But the common denominator with this woman who was facing foreclosure with seven kids and the utilities cut off, Steve Shives, who was a handyman and was the junkyard, rejected his junk, okay, is that these people basically took their backyard or their kitchen table. We can even throw in Jeff Bezos, Steve Jobs and Wozniak. We can take these people because essentially the common denominator with all these people besides a backyard or a kitchen table or a spare bedroom is they were working with intellectual property. Mignon Francois took her grandmother's cupcake recipe and $5, and now she's turned that into over $10 million. That's over a number of years now. But it started with that type of intellectual property. Steve Shives, when he came back from the dump, because the junkyard rejected his junk, he used his intellectual capital to develop a camper, which now is Runaway Campers, which you can look that up online. Everybody has, in my opinion, probably almost an infinite amount. Everybody listening to this podcast, we've all had, you don't have to have a great idea. You don't even have to have a good idea. Just have an idea. And if you can bring it into fruition just one time and then multiply it by 10, or more. It's up to you. I mean, Jeff Bezos took a simple idea. I think he started off selling books and shoes online, mail order, whatever. And he took that intellectual property and just kept on stepping it up. So we can all do that. So we're going to the phone lines here. We're going to see what we can come up with. You guys have brought up some intellectual property every day this week. And
anything you want. You can at least have some freedom. You can set it up as a secondary income. You can help change someone's life. And it don't have to be just a tiny house. It could be any house, but it's time to take these houses and turn them into homes. And it doesn't matter the size. It matters the value of who you become by making this change.
Now, Chris, I imagine from your experience, because you know the thing or two about tiny houses, backyard, driveway, I mean, basically, what do you suggest a person who, you know, wants to build one, where could they start?
Well, most cities here in America, there's a variance that says that you can build an ADU in your backyard utilizing a certain amount of square footage. So it depends on the size of your backyard. But you have to look and find out if you have to be blood, married, or adopted to be able to live in some of these situations, which those are just little things that can be changed in the order of the city ordinance by people coming together to do so. And if you live in a rural area, you know, it's pretty free to do what you want to do out there. The counties are a whole lot different than they are in the city. And the thing is you can bring all the resources you need to the county. It just comes down to the community of the county wanting to not have to drive so far for a grocery store. Because if you turn around and you build these businesses, now, as you bring people out of the city, they actually have ways of making income, and that's coming down to fixing the problem with a solution. And the beautiful thing is the community can build the grocery store, so you don't have to know construction to be able to change lives and to change your income.
Okay. Now, you have a project. Let me open up this mic with Carlos Villamars. What for people that are just tuning in? And good morning, Carlos.
Thank you, sir.
Let's go with Carlos. Share with us, particularly people that haven't been here all week. What you've done in your backyard.
Okay. Yeah, I built a 10 by 20 passive solar greenhouse, and a lot of people don't understand. I just realized I'm doing a video the other day that some people don't understand what passive solar means. Passive solar means a structure that naturally heats and cools itself. In other words, minimal heating and cooling required, like off-grid. So I built an aquaponic system that integrates fish, plant, and mushroom production, and I put it inside of a passive solar structure. And what that means is that I can grow fish, plants, and mushrooms all year round here in Falls Church, Virginia, including the wintertime when there's 4 feet of snow outside. So, of course, in the summertime, the greenhouse is used for starting plants and to bringing them out into the yard and for generating compost and soil and also growing food. But in the wintertime, when there's snow everywhere, I can still continue to grow food in the greenhouse because it's a passive solar design. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah, it does. Now, what any plan? Well, let's keep it simple for people that other people that might want to do what you've done in the backyard, you know, with a greenhouse or carport. Any basic suggestions on what they need to do?
Well, you know, the beauty of these systems is they're extremely simple. Like a passive solar design was invented by the Chinese people several hundred years ago. And it's a very basic technology, very, very low tech, but very, very smart. So basically you need a fully insulated structure. So what I did is I took a carport, a 10 by 20 carport, $99. And you could do it cheaper, right? If you have the skills, you could just build a frame. You know, I didn't have the carpentry skills. I'm an electrical engineer. So I went the low-tech way, you know, a way that I can do it without having to, you know, do carpentry. So what I did is I bought me a 10 by 20 carport, one of these El Cheapo ones that has one-inch tubing. I attached it to the ground with some shelving units that the carport tubes fit through. And then I put gravel all over the shelving units as a floor, and that anchored the carport to the ground just by weight. There's no foundation. There's, you know, no pilings or anything like that. So literally the weight of the gravel is holding the carport against the ground. So now you've got a frame that you can build off of. And then what I did is I took 2-inch ThermaShield, which are these insulated panels. Anybody that does construction knows what these are. But you could use other insulation, you know, bamboo and mud. You know, you could go super low tech. But, of course, I was trying to build something that I could buy everything from Home Depot. That was my goal, was to be able to just buy the stuff and build it.
Right.
And I'm a person of action. You know, when I get building, I build. I don't care. You know, I kind of improvise as needed, if you know what I mean. So I took 2-inch mm-hmm. ThermaShield, and that gave me insulation of about R18 or something like that. So the carport is insulated on the east, the west, and the north walls, and the north roof, and the lower south, about a foot or so, is also insulated. And then the whole entire south is triple pane polycarbonate glazing. That's where the sun comes through. And what I did is I extended the carport. You know, the carport is an A-frame, right? Just like a house that you mm-hmm. draw when you're a little kid. Well,
okay.
In order to get the angle that I need for my winter sun, because the way these systems work is you want all of that sun energy from the winter sun to come inside that box and get captured. So you want the glazing at the perfect angle for your winter solstice sun, which is based on latitude. And for Falls Church, Virginia, here where I'm living, it's around 70 degrees or so is the angle that I want on the glazing. Now, of course, the A-frame is at 45 degrees, so I needed to extend the top of the A-frame using 1-inch PVC to get that extra 2 feet or so that I needed off of the A-frame in order to get my glazing at the angle that I needed for my winter solstice sun. And then the final feature, so you've got a fully insulated structure, you've got glazing on the south that's at the perfect angle for the winter solstice sun. And then finally, the last component is you need air movement. Well, actually, two more components. You need air movement. So I've got vents on the lower south of the greenhouse and vents on the upper north. And what that does is it allows air to move through the entire greenhouse in from the south and out through the top of the north. The final component of a passive solar greenhouse is a thermal battery. That's a battery that can store heat. And what the Chinese people figured out is water is a beautiful thermal battery. If you put water inside of a black container and put it out in the sun, it'll get really hot. And it'll take a long time for that heat to dissipate. You know, water takes, you know, it takes a long time to heat up and it takes a long time to dissipate, which is basically a battery. When you're heating it up, you're charging the battery. When it's releasing the heat, you're dissipating the battery. So it's a thermal battery. Well, it doesn't require any electricity. It's just basically water in a container painted black. So now you put in your water battery, your thermal battery, and now you've got a greenhouse that can maintain its temperature all year round. Just do conventional planting in it. You know, you don't have to do aquaponics. You could just do like the Chinese. They just grew regular plants without using aquaponics. Can you guys still hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, so you know, you can be done. You know, that's one part. You know, that could be just one design that's well-known, prior art, invented by the Chinese a couple hundred years ago. You dig a hole in the side of a mountain, put some barrels full of water in the back, cover the hole on the mountain with plastic, and now you've got a passive solar greenhouse. At night, the Chinese would put a cover over the plastic because that's where all the heat escapes from, is from the glazing, from the glass, because that's got the lowest insulative value. So, you know, using this carport, I was able to simulate a Chinese solar greenhouse, and I put my aquaponics system inside of it, and I started growing fish, plants, and mushrooms in the greenhouse. And the mushrooms came along because the back of the greenhouse is dark, you know, and when I first built the greenhouse, I was just doing plants and mushrooms, and I noticed that the beds in the back of the greenhouse were not getting very much light, so I wasn't able to grow in them. So then I said, well, you know, I know what grows in the dark. Mushrooms grow in the dark. So I started experimenting with growing mushrooms in the back grow beds. And even though they weren't supposed to grow, in other words, all the mycologists, all the experts, and as I said, I'm not a biologist, I'm not a mycologist, but all the experts were telling me that it wouldn't work, that there's no way the mushrooms are going to grow because they're going to get contaminated, because the greenhouse is dirty, true story, because there's trichoderma, which is this fungus that messes up mushroom production all over the greenhouse, true story. But being a hard-headed engineer, I don't, you know, when an expert tells me that there's a problem, my engineering brain says every problem has a solution and every solution is an invention. So I decided to go ahead and try to grow mushrooms aquaponically, and they grew beautifully. Everybody was stumped. It wasn't supposed to work. I didn't know why it worked. It was, you know, a miracle in a sense. Well, it turns out that by dumb luck or by divine destiny, my fish pond is 2 parts per 1,000 saline. There's salt water in the pond, a little bit. You know, 2 parts for every 1,000 is not a lot of salt, but it's enough salt to keep the fish healthy, to keep their slime coat healthy. So in raising fish, you want to have a little bit of salinity in your aquaponic system, about 1 to 2 parts per 1,000. So my system had salt in it, the salt water. That's what kept the mushrooms from contaminating, because salt water is antibacterial. So that was the miracle. And had I listened to the experts and said, oh, you can't grow mushrooms in there, I never would have tried. So this is also my lesson. You know, when an expert tells you that there's a problem, believe them. But also think of that as an opportunity to solve that problem and to have an invention. And that's what I did. Thank you.
I'm taking notes. Now, let me repeat this and see if I got it right.
I do have a clubhouse room that I hold that's recorded, mm-hmm. that has a presentation that details exactly everything I talked about. Even though it's simple to me, it's complex to other people. But I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay, now, one of the things I want to make sure I got this right. Every problem has a solution, and every solution, there's an invention.
That's correct.
All right, good. I just had a paradigm shift. Okay. We're going to get back to you in a moment on that. You and Chris are collaborating. So, I mean, can you guys share that collaboration, or is it too soon to let the cat out of the bag?
No, we're open source. You know, the beauty about what Chris is doing, he's already open source because he's put his stuff out there and he's been doing it. I'm open source in the sense that all of my technology is free for personal, educational, and humanitarian use. So the fact that Chris is doing a humanitarian mission of building tiny houses to feed the homeless, I wanted to build tiny houses to house the homeless. I wanted to build tiny houses to feed and house the homeless. I had the invention, but I didn't have the infrastructure. And then Brother Chris comes along out of grace. You know, we met randomly on Clubhouse, and he tells me that he's been building tiny homes and he's got a machine that manufactures the steel for making the tiny homes. And I'm just sitting, saying to myself, you know, just like the Reese's Cup commercial, you know, you got chocolate on my peanut butter, you got peanut butter on my chocolate, and we got a Reese's Cup. I've got the technology, he's got the infrastructure and the mission, and both of our missions are perfectly aligned because the whole purpose of the greenhouse that I built in my backyard was to teach people how to grow their food, specifically people that didn't have access to money, that didn't have access to good food. But Brother Chris can talk more about what he's been doing, and he's the rock star in this. You know, I just came up with a little greenhouse in my backyard, you know, but he's the one that's been doing the real work, you know, boots on the ground, walking the talk. So I'm very, very honored and pleased to be partner with Chris.
Well, hold on, Chris, before we get back to you, Chris, let's go to the root of this, because could you give us, because a lot of this starts with ideas. You have a lot of people are down on their luck. They could be in a social service office. I'm not knocking social services or nothing like that. But everybody, I mean absolute everybody, has a regular flow of ideas. Ideas are intellectual capital, and that can be commoditized into money. So let's get very fundamental. Could you give us a definition of intellectual property?
Okay. Yeah, it's intellectual property. I think the best way to define it is think of it as an umbrella. And what does an umbrella do? It protects you, right?
Right.
So think of intellectual property as an umbrella that protects innovation. Okay, that's easy to picture, right? You got an umbrella,
right?
And you've got innovation, greenhouses, chemical, innovations are everywhere, right? It's not just greenhouses, electronics,
right.
Software, hardware, you name it, okay? All that stuff is the innovation, and the intellectual property is the umbrella that is used to protect that innovation. And the umbrella has a bunch of tools in it, just like a tool closet, right? So each tool is set up to solve a specific problem. So the tools of intellectual property include patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets, computer and internet law, which is really important right now, always important, by the way, and licensing, which is how do you monetize those innovations. That's what makes up the intellectual property umbrella. And each tool has a different purpose. A patent protects functionality. So if you come up with something that's functional, I have a greenhouse that functions to grow fish, plants, and mushrooms. It has a structure that allows that function to be performed. With a patent, you can claim that structure, and that way you can protect that function. So this is very broad protection, because I don't care how you perform that function. If I'm claiming it, you know, if I'm claiming the structure, as long as you do the basic components of the structure, you're infringing the patent, which means the person that holds the patent can collect money from you. Or can make money. You know, this is how the patent system this is how Apple became Apple, right there in their garage. They're inventing, they file patents, and now they can use those patents to create a monopoly to allow them to grow their business to become Apple. And after the patents are over, they get donated to the public. And that's how the patent system helps technology. It helps little companies become big companies. And all that technology, after the patent is over, gets donated to the public. So that's how the patent system works. It's extremely expensive because of patent attorneys like myself, who are the most expensive part of the patenting system. So now copyrights protect works of authorship, movie, logo, cartoon, book, okay? So that's what a copyright protects. A trademark protects your brand. Google for search engines, Apple for computing products, Pizza Hut for pizza. Not such a great trademark, by the way, because it suggests the name. A good trademark does not suggest the service. So Google for search engines, you know, Apple for computing products, awesome trademarks. And then finally, trade secrets. The best example is the Coca-Cola formula. It's still a secret. Nobody knows the formula except Coca-Cola. And the formula is very difficult to reverse engineer. It's very difficult to figure out on your own. Now, of course, once we get quantum computers, a lot of these formulas are going to be broken. But right now, chemical formulas are very, very difficult to reverse engineer. And reverse engineering is fair when it comes to trade secrets. What that means is if something is easily figured out, guess what? You can't keep it a trade secret, because anybody can figure it out. A trade secret is something that's very difficult to figure out, and that's why it's kept secret. So those are the basic structures of intellectual property. And I do have free courses online. If you search Lean IPR, L-E-A-N space IPR, intellectual property rights, and you find my name, Carlos Villamar, you will see that I have free webinars. Every time I search Lean IPR, my videos come up at the top of the list. And I think other, that happened organically. I'm not an influencer, quote, you know, I don't have like a huge horde of followers or anything like that. But those videos just became popular on their own organically. And there's three videos. The first one teaches you intellectual property basics, what's a patent, what's a trademark, what's a copyright, et cetera. The second one teaches you what's a patent. If somebody comes to you with a patent and says, give me money, because you're violating my patent, what do you do? Well, you can watch that webinar and at least know enough to be dangerous. You know, save yourself a little bit of money with an attorney, you know, by doing some of the legwork yourself. And then finally, the last webinar was a lecture I gave at a makerspace here in Northern Virginia. There's a makerspace that's sponsored by Northern Virginia Community College, NOVA. They're out in Ruston. And I gave a patent drafting workshop that was filmed. And in that workshop, I describe what you can do to minimize attorney time when you're writing a patent application, you know, for an invention. So between those three webinars, you know, it's enough for people to be dangerous. It's enough for people to save some money, you know, if they decide to go down the inventing route. And it's my public service. You know, I put that out as I know I could have monetized them. You know, I still thought about it, but then, you know, I'm here to help people. And I'm like, you know, I don't know. It just feels dirty. And you know, I'd rather just put the knowledge out there and let people learn it than, you know, try to charge them a buck for it.
Well, I've taken notes and gone through some paradigm shifts on this. Because, like I say, everybody, who doesn't have a good idea? Some people get good ideas. I mean, you know, it's not so much whether it's good or bad or excellent. People have ideas. So it's, I look at it as not only intellectual property, but you can say it's intellectual capital. But it helps to have a fundamental background and some of the things that you just shared on here, and then go into more, I guess, in-depth study. on it.
People need to learn the basics, right? They need to learn the basics before they can learn the advanced. And that's that's the point of those webinars, is just to teach people the basics so that they just know what they're talking about, you know, so they know, you know, that you can search things, you know. That's the whole point of the webinars is, you know, tell you the truth, the reason I made them was because I try to make things as efficient as possible. And I noticed that people kept asking me the same questions over and over and over again. Inventors, same exact questions over and over and over again. And that's when I said, I'll just do a webinar. And that way, when I get a potential client, the first thing I do is I have them go do homework. I'm like, you know, if you want to save money, and that's why you're, you know, you're telling me you want to save money in the process, go watch my webinars, okay? And I can tell whether they watched them or not by the questions that they ask me, because when somebody asks me a question, it's probably in the webinar, and it's in there for a reason, because I've gotten that question asked to me, you know, 5 million times. So the webinars are really cool to help me be more efficient when I work with clients that need that efficiency. I have other clients, by the way, that tell me, Carlos, I don't want to lift a pencil. You know, I'm going to pay you for everything. You just do everything. And I'm like, awesome. I will do everything, and I will charge them for everything, and it will be the most expensive way to go. You know, better for me than earning more money.
Yeah, some people want a turnkey. Yeah, some people have, if they have the money, they want a turnkey situation. Now, when it gets reverse engineering, I remember, Honda, I believe, the guy who started the Honda, you know, motors. I think it was him or Toyota, maybe Honda. He reversed, or maybe both of them, they reverse engineered a car. And long story short, you know, after they learned how to break it down and put it back together, they started, you know, producing their own vehicles. I think Toyota does, which is a family business.
You might be I don't know if you're referring to the movie or the story called Flash of Genius. If you haven't watched this movie,
I'm going to watch it now. You said Flash of Genius?
It's called Flash of Genius. And this is the story. Okay. It's a sad story. This inventor invents the intermittent windshield wipers. Intermittent windshield wiper, you know how your windshield wiper like hesitates? You can put it on a setting that it only turns on when there's water or it blinks. You know, it'll go on for a second and then stop for 2 seconds, on for a second, stop for 2 seconds. That's called the intermittent windshield wiper. Some guy invented that in his garage. And it's a, you know, it's a simple, simple invention. It's basically a timer. I mean, think about it. It's a timer. A timer turns things on and off based on time, right? The intermittent windshield wiper was just a windshield wiper connected to a timer. And you set the time. You want it to go every second, every 2 seconds, every 3 seconds. The invention was extremely simple, very easy to reverse engineer, right? Right now, just me telling you that, there's people right now that can build it just from that sentence that I just said. So you can't keep that a trade secret, right? It's too easy to figure out.
Right.
He went and got patents on, he got it patented, okay? And he went to all the major car companies, and they all sounded really interested until they sent him a letter saying, oh, guess what? We're developing something very similar. They basically copied him, and they knew they copied him. But they knew that they had more money than him. See, this is the game that's played with patents.
And they had money to fight and protect.
They had money to fight his patent, and this is the methodology. If it's cheaper to fight you in court than to buy your patent, what are they going to do? It's a rhetorical question.
Right.
They're going to fight you in court, right?
Yeah.
In other words,
right,
you're going to validate your patent for $500,000 and you're asking a million. Well, the company's going to sue you, and they're going to, you know, you're going to sue them, and they're going to go to court, and they're going to dump a bunch of money to try to wipe you out with lawyers and fees,
right,
et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem. So even though he went and shopped it to all these companies, they just copied it. And there's a scene in the movie, I don't know if it really happened in real life, where he's driving around and he sees a Camaro, like a 69, I think it was around 1969 or so. And he goes over and he sees that the windshield wipers were intermittent, and he breaks open the hood. I don't know if he really did this, by the way. You know, in the movie, he breaks open the hood and he sees his circuit in there. And now he knows that they blatantly copied him. And he starts suing these motor companies. And he spends the rest of his life trying to recover the money for his patents, loses his family. And I shouldn't be laughing because it's not funny. He lost his family. His family left him. You know, he's still trying to fight the motor companies. He dies, okay, during the course of the litigation. And then like 3 years later, they settle, and his family gets like $30 million or something like that. But the man died, okay? You know, his family got to see the rewards of his hard work, but he died. Now, the difference now is that there's law firms that will sue God for 40 to 60% of the profit. So now, you know, law firms have gotten more advanced. And if you have a patent that's worth money and there's some people that are making a lot of money off of it, there's law firms now that will do the litigation, 100% cover the costs, and then once they settle, they'll recover the costs, and then they'll split the difference with you, you know, anywhere from 40 to 60% they'll take. But, you know, it allows somebody that doesn't have the money to sue a major car corporation the ability to do so, but they only do it if they know they're going to win. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you go to them and they don't take your case, it's because they're like, well, you know, it's probably less than 75% chance of us winning. They only go in when they're at like 80, 90% sure that they're going to win. So, you know, it's not a sure bet. So yeah, so a patent can help you, but a corporation can still attack your patent if they're more well-funded than you are, you know, for the litigation. But there is a way around it. And of course, the way around it, it requires investment, and that's to develop a portfolio around your idea. One patent is basically worthless.
Hello? Okay. Chris, are you there? All right, hold it. Wait a minute. Oh, boy. Okay. This happens with Blog Talk on occasion. Chris, I can't hear you. Well, not Chris. Carlos, I can't hear you. Chris, are you there? Can anybody hear me? All right, we got a slight audio problem here. Okay, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. Well, I see what happened. Okay, Carlos, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I think
oh,
I lost connection
happened
on my end.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Yeah, I lost connection too. I'm back. I'm back.
Oh,
okay.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't
all
know
right
what happened. I thought my fat fingers had shut off the phone
no,
by accident.
We got a call here for
I'm
hold it.
Finishing
before
up. I'm sorry.
Okay. Go ahead. Finish. Go ahead. Finish up.
Yeah, I was just saying that you know, one patent. You need to develop a portfolio around your invention. And to develop a portfolio, you're going to need investors. You're going to need somebody that believes in your idea. But this is a way to sort of skin that cat. You know, if we can get the first patent filed, right?
Right.
And if it really is something that, that has value, you got to go out there and guess what you got to do now? You got to do the business and the marketing end, which is the most important part, okay? You got to get mm-hmm. out there in front of people, and you got to get them to believe your story. Friends, family, neighbors, strangers, you need help, right? But if you have a patent and somebody can appreciate what you're doing, right, hopefully you can get an investor to come in and develop the portfolio, and they're going to want a piece of the pie, right? People don't do things for free, unfortunately. So they're going to want a piece of the pie, and they're going to fund the portfolio, and now you can go and use that portfolio to become an Apple or a Microsoft without the fear of being attacked, because now it's cheaper for the corporation to buy you than to attack you. And it's simple math, right? If I go to a mm-hmm. corporation with one patent and I'm asking for $1 million and they know they can invalidate that patent for $500,000, we're going to be in court, right?
All right.
However, if I go to that corporation with 100 patents, it's going to cost them $500,000 a patent to invalidate each patent. So the price doesn't change for invalidating. So now 500,000 times 100, what is that? Is that 5 million? Or, yeah, I think it's 5 million or maybe 50 million. My simple math, I do complex math, but simple math, I have to think about it. But anyways, you know, as long as you ask for a portion of that number, they're going to pay it, right? In other words,
yeah.
if it costs $5 million to invalidate your patent portfolio in order to steal your idea, right, but you're only asking for $4 million, wouldn't it be smarter to just buy the company for $4 million than to spend $5 million trying to fight it? That's the logic.
No, that's true.
Once you have a portfolio, it's cheaper for them to go away or to buy you than to fight you.
Now, before I go in
and
piggyback on that, for people that are just tuning in, I'm going to recommend, Carlos recommended this film. I'm going to try to watch it today. Flash of Genius. It's a 2008 film, biographical film, and it focuses on a guy named Robert Kearns. His character is played by Greg Kinnear. So you can read about they got a Wikipedia page for both. You can go to Wikipedia and look up Flash of Genius, and then it's about, this is a true story apparently, by Robert Kearns. So I'll be watching that tonight, or that's, matter of fact, this afternoon probably. Now I got one question before we go back to Chris, and then we got a caller for you too. Could you explain, like, for instance, if we go back in a time machine, let's say,
I love these
hypotheticals. 1976, 1980, somewhere around there, where IBM was king of the hill when it came to computers.
Correct.
Now, and nobody has heard of Google or Yahoo, or, you know, Samsung phones and all this other stuff. Or Apple. Okay. Now, and then Sears and Roebuck back during that time period was the king of the hill. I mean, because you can practically
buy the house,
the furniture house, all at Sears, get it financed, the whole nine yards. So what's your take on, because we're talking about people that started off in their backyard or on their kitchen table or in their garage, and they ended up dwarfing, I mean, because I think Sears might be on life support right now. Kmart, I think they're out of business. What's your take on how people went from their backyard garages or bedrooms to dwarf these companies?
You know, that's a great question, and I think it has to do with vision, and it also has to do with the patent system. You know, the patent system is designed to help visionaries. So, you know, corporations, you know, oftentimes lose their vision once they start making money, right? Let's give an example, internal combustion engine, right?
Yeah.
And then comes somebody, you know, the electric engine was well known, you know, has been well known. Why didn't electric cars overtake gas cars immediately? Well, because we went down the gas route first, and a bunch of corporations made tooling, infrastructure. You know, just imagine the investment it takes to build cars, like a car factory, right? And now going to them and saying, you need to switch to electric. They're like, we're not switching crap. We've got a full assembly line. We've got, you know, we're already making money. So you know, it's like a dinosaur, right? It's very hard for or a gigantic ship. It's very hard for a gigantic ship to change course. It has to happen very, very slowly, right? Meanwhile, innovators are agile. We're agile. We can turn on a dime, right? Because we don't have this gigantic ship. We've got a tiny little garage.
There's no, the little guy has no bureaucracy to deal with.
That's right. So we're with the patent system, we can disrupt these dinosaurs. It's disruption is what it is. The patent system allows you to disrupt existing systems. So, for example, let's talk about Tesla and the electric car, okay? You know, Tesla disrupted the car industry with his electric vehicle. And they have tons of patents on their electric vehicle. You know, they know the game, right? You get patents.
Uh-huh.
They can't buy you. They can't take you out of the game. If they can't buy you and they can't take you out of the game, guess what? You're in the game. You are the game. So Tesla became the electric car game because of the patent system. Do you understand how that – because the other corporations never would have gone electric. Why would they? There's still oil, and there's still people buying gas cars. And you know, the environment is a secondary thought after profit. Unfortunately, I read an article about modern economics is actually all screwed up because it doesn't take into account externalities, the harm that it causes. You know, all economics right now is based on profit. You're using this much material, you're making this much money. Well, what if you're causing lung cancer to 20 million people and it's costing $1 a person? You know, that business is technically not profitable. But because of these externalities that aren't calculated as part of a profit, these companies, quote, claim to be profitable. They're not, actually, a lot of them. When you look at the societal cost and the environmental cost, if you put that into the equation, we would see that a lot of our so-called corporations that we admire so much really are not profitable. They're actually doing more harm than good. So, you know, the patent system is what allows technologies to emerge by giving Tesla a monopoly on its invention so that he can develop a car company.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's what happened. And that lets other people into the game, right? Because Tesla isn't going to invent everything related to electric cars. They don't have all the brains on Earth. They have some of the brains. But there's a guy in a garage right now that doesn't work for Tesla, has never worked for a corporation, that is inventing right now electric stuff that somebody else has never thought of. That's the beauty of innovation. You know, it requires a brain, and there's lots of people with brains. You know, so
yeah,
that's you know,
true.
That's true.
What do you think, Chris?
Rivian. Yeah, there's a company called Rivian that's in Bloomington, Illinois. It's making the electric trucks for Amazon right now.
Yep. Think of all the businesses Musk opened up with his electric, you know, by pushing electric. I'll give you another example of why the system is not functioning properly. I had a guy, an inventor from MIT. He invented something called light glove. It's a little glove you put on your hands that has these little electronic components on it called infrared transceivers that can make a model of your hand down to a nanometer. In other words, it can, just using light, it can make a perfect model of your hand, okay, that now you can play the piano in the air. You can control, you've seen The Matrix and where people move screens in the air and every, you know, there's no mouse, everything's being done by hand. He invented that. He invented a glove that would allow people to do that. No corporation wanted, well, corporations wanted to license his patents to put them on a shelf. In other words, they would buy the patent just to not put the technology out, to not let it go out. Why is that? Because they have a multi-million dollar mouse market. It's just like the internal combustion engine and the electric vehicle, right? Why would a corporation that's making hundreds of millions of dollars on mice, you know, mechanical mice for computers, why would they all of a sudden switch over to this light glove and wipe out their entire mouse industry? This is where the patent system comes in. You know, and unfortunately, you know, this guy with light glove, I don't think ever made it. You know, he tried and tried and tried and tried and wasn't able to, you know, bring his product to market, unfortunately. But that would be an incredible product. You know, it would replace all mice. You would just be using your hands, you know, to control everything. So that's where the patent system comes in, is to, you know, enable that, you know, the little person to get a monopoly and to create a business around it, which is, you know, it's also an interesting lesson because, you know, people always ask, I want to create a startup, right? You probably heard this, right? I want to start a business. I want to create a startup. Yeah. Give me an idea. And what I tell people, which what I learned from lecturing, is that find a problem that you're interested in, that inspires you, that you're passionate about. Look at Brother Chris. He's passionate about what he's doing. I can tell you with 1,000% certainty that he's passionate about it because there's videos of him walking the talk, you know? So find a problem you're passionate about and build a business around it. And as long as other people share your passion, you will be successful. But then the question is always, what business to start, you know? And one of, you know, there's a startup course from Stanford called How to Start a Startup. It used to be free. I took it when it was free. I think now they're charging for it. But one of the articles talked about which type of startup should you go after? And this is the hypothetical. And I'm going to quiz you guys because I know you're smart. And I want, you know, I want you to answer this question. You have a choice between two startups, okay? You have to pick one or the other. This is the first startup. A small percentage of a large market. Let me give you an example. Restaurants. Restaurants are a small percentage of a large market, right? The market is huge, and restaurants take a small percentage of that huge market. And they're constantly trying to take a bigger percentage, obviously, right? They're trying to grow their market size. So that's option one, a small percentage of a large market. Option number two, a niche market with proprietary technology. A niche market, but you have proprietary technology related to that niche market. What that means is you have a monopoly. So those are the two choices, a small percentage of a large market with no monopoly or a niche market with a monopoly. What are you going to pick?
Me personally, I'm going with the niche market than with the small market. I want to be the biggest fish in the pond, and I want to own the pond.
You know, brother, I knew you would get the right answer. I really did. Everybody picks the other one, by the way. You know, I've been doing this quiz for a while now. I'm a curious person, you know, and right now, just on my rough statistics of my brain of thinking of, you know, this question that I've asked, I'd say about 80% of the people picked the wrong answer. They picked
I'm
the restaurant.
I'm
going to
tell you how I came
and
to
let
that.
Me tell you,
no, go ahead.
Please.
I'm listening. Well,
no, I
this is how I came across
it.
It started in high school with me. I wasn't even thinking about business back then. But back then, I was 9th, 10th, and 11th grade. I played basketball at a very competitive school. I did pretty well with that. But then I had a knee injury. And it was a place, looking back on it, where if you got a knee injury, I mean, there were 14 other guys that can take your place. It's as simple as that.
Right.
So I transferred to a school where I had my 9th grade coach. They weren't on the radar at that time, but I helped put them on the radar, and that got me into college in Texas. Now, then over the years, matter of fact, I'll tell you how I started buying rural land, because I have a house right now in Washington, D.C., which is vacant. I had a squatter in there, and it took me 3 years to get that squatter out. And what I discovered, long story short, I tried to get together with some other landlords or other property owners, and let's form a membership group and hire a lobbyist to get some laws changed. Too long, too expensive to get that going. Yeah. So then what I did was, and I was doing podcasts by this time, right on this, what we're doing right now. I discovered that, you know what, if I go to a rural area, I can get a lot more value, a lot more land with dramatically less regulation, whatever. And then I started interviewing mayors of small, teeny, like towns that had less than 350 people or towns that have 100 people. Like when I go out to Oklahoma, there's a particular town where the mayor picks me up at the airport every time and makes sure I get back home every time. So, and then what I did was I looked at common denominators of billionaires. And what I found with the common denominators out of billionaires, and I'm not saying people need to be a billionaire, I'm doing my homework, is they're basically pioneers. So every piece of property that I get involved with is in a rural area where there's no bus line, there's no metro station, I don't have to worry about no urban problems at all. In other words, I can do practically anything I want to do. And that's how I came up with that answer I gave you.
That's brilliant because, you know, that analogy that you gave is actually perfect. You know, you were in a big school, high profile, 15 guys could replace you, right? That's the restaurant. I can open the best Ecuadorian. I'm from Ecuador, by the way, and I live here in Falls Church, and we've got thousands of ethnic restaurants. By the way, if you're ever in Falls Church, we have the best restaurants on earth. I'll tell you for sure, because we're a mixed community, El Salvadorian, Peru, you name it, like every cuisine except Ecuadorian. There's no Ecuadorian restaurant here. There's Peruvian, lots of Peruvian chicken stuff. So I open up the best Ecuadorian restaurant on earth right here. What stops you from putting one right next to me? Nothing. And that's the problem with, you know, at that point, you're in cheaper, better, faster land, pick two. Now, somebody said they can deliver all three, and I heard it's not possible. But anyways, you know, now you're in cheaper, better, faster land, right? Either better be cheaper and faster, better and faster, you know, pick two. That's not where you want to be. You want to be in niche land where you're the big fish in, you know, in the aquarium, just like what you said. You went to a smaller school that now – you're able to shine, right? You've got a monopoly because you're the most talented dude there. Same exact thing with a niche market and proprietary technology. You can set your price. You can recover your R&D costs. You can grow yourself to be an Apple.
Right.
And now, once you've captured your niche market, then you can start expanding into other markets, you know, other markets.
Now let's switch off the Chris. Now Chris, you do the tiny house thing, and what I like about tiny houses, because I know a bunch of people that they still like matter of fact, in the DMV, I got a friend of mine that some people just refuse the thought of living in a tiny house. Now, look, for people who don't know me, I'm 6'8". I like the idea of tiny houses because they cut out 70 to 80% of the waste that you're going to have in a normal household. It costs more to heat them. It costs more to cool them. You got maintenance. It's more expensive. And if you don't watch it, you can end up spending more on maintenance than the actual purchase price of the house. So that's why I like tiny houses. However, I don't think there's going to be a mass exodus from your major cities to the rural areas or whatever. However, there's enough people out here suffering right now, living in so-called normal, 1,500 square foot, 1,200 square foot houses. Those are not mansions by any stretch of the imagination. But I think tiny houses are a niche. And then, Chris, you have, I guess you have a niche within that. So, Chris, could you explain to us why you, one of the things you do, because you do more than one thing, tiny houses.
Well, you know, looking at the tiny house situation, it don't necessarily, we have to look at it as, hey, you need to move out of what you're living in. You know, people live in nice big homes, drive nice cars, and do all this. They work hard. They get, you know, but then they want the nicer things in life. You know, having a life is the nicest thing in life. There's nothing nicer that you're ever going to buy than to know that you're going to survive and thrive. It doesn't take, you know, an Escalade. It don't take that Range Rover. And the thing is in a smaller unit, I can put more elaborate stuff. You know, do you have to have a room or a living room that's got to be 22 feet by 30 feet in distance? Well, if you do, it's called a party house. So evidently you need that size of a home. But you could also have it where it could do other things, not just be empty most of the time. Because when you start looking at how much space do you honestly need to get through your life, to be happy, and when people don't have any space, they're not happy. And we've got way too many children out there that aren't happy. They're hungry, and they need their joy to stay with them. And that comes down to the kids that are with the families that have. Let's make all our kids and all our families have. We can do that. And you can still be an entrepreneur. You can still, you know, grow and do so many things. But also everyone else can too. You know, with these inventions, you know, that I sit here and listen, and the way he so eloquently puts it, you're a creator. I'm layman, so I'm going to just talk that way. You are a creator every second of the day. Okay? It doesn't take a great big space for you to create because it happens in your mind. It's in 10% of your body. And it's not even 10% of your body. But it has more power than all the computers on Earth. So we want to have these innovation labs, but they're not just for children. They're for you, because every person is continuing, growing, living soul. And it doesn't take a big house, but if you want one, I'll build you one. It doesn't matter to me what you want. If you can afford it and that's what it is you want and that be it, then you can still have it. But maybe you could have something in your backyard that helps out someone else. But a lot of people don't want to have anybody around. You know, that's been the discord that we've had with the human race, is people go in their house, they don't even know who their neighbor is. Yeah. And People don't look sideways. They don't say hello. You know, I noticed that these tiny communities, not only do people say hello, but they smile, because these people never had a community, something that they can know that they're safe, know that they're going to move themselves forward, know they have something they haven't had. But if our children have something positive to do in the afternoon by building these tiny houses, and they can not only build them with themselves, but build them with their parents, build them with other parents, because, you know, it truly takes a village to raise a child, but I live in the United States, and I ain't never seen the United States unite for nothing. But I think we need to unite on a humanity front. And the houses that I'm producing, you can take down and we can rebuild into something else. They does not have to continue to be a tiny house. We can add on to it by taking two or three of these things and putting them together, four or five of them, whatever meets the family need. But let's do it over the greed, and let's meet the need. And when we do, that's when everybody can achieve harmony, not stress. You know, I see signs in my city that say, welcome to Bloomington, Illinois. And right on the corner, that sign that they just spent $100,000 on, are panhandlers freezing to death because it's snowing outside. It's below freezing out here, and it's cold. It only takes moments. And these people in this city, they don't look sideways. And it doesn't take much to change someone's life. It takes an hour or two. But what it takes is you and I together as wives to give unity in a community, giving an equal opportunity. And I love the people that I've met. Carlos is an amazing man. And, you know, his knowledge and his expertise is there for you. All you had to do was pay attention to what he said. And I ask people to pay attention because it's the only free thing in life that you have. But you also have free will. And the last thing you'll ever do is write your will. But what are you going to be able to put in it to say you're actually leaving behind? So people need to ask who they are. You know, I do ask the question, and I'll say it again in case anybody's on here that has never heard it. Who are you when no one's around, when you get to create and make a sound? Don't answer it to another human being, please. We want to see who you are. I want to see you continue to grow. Reach out and we'll do it together. And that will change. I don't care where you are. Because I'm doing things over. Go ahead, brother.
Hold on a minute, Chris. 602, Eric, hold your mic is open.
Oh, hey, I just wanted to pop in. And I've been loving everything you two are saying. It's Nicholas Ledbetter, I guess. I'm Taoist, and it's kind of been an interesting life transition. And I gotta say, there's a phrase from there that the Tao of mankind pulls from the lower to raise the upper. Meanwhile, the real Tao lowers the upper to raise the lower. And it really is about we won't survive if we keep pulling on the boat like this. We're using it wrong. And I've moved from Scottsdale in like the last 2 years to Tempe, and I was the weird hippie walking around by the golf course around my place, waving and smiling at people, making eye contact. And now they were in robot mode and kind of annoyed that I was, but there was an occasional human being that was like, oh my God, you said hello and acknowledged me. So I just kept doing that. And I got to say, when I moved to Tempe, it's a much tighter community. And you felt that even though there's more of a struggle.
Well, I like the hippie type. I I had to catch back up to was this friend of mine. Her name is all I know her by is Red Moon Song. I met her at an event sponsored by the U.S. Department of Energy called the Solar Decathlon. And I'll explain a little bit about her. She now we met at the Solar Decathlon, which is an event which is it's now global, where like 19 to 21 universities at that time would come to the Washington Mall in Washington, D.C., and they would build from scratch a solar village. I mean, with infrastructure, the whole – they would build a little town on the Washington Mall. Awesome. And, I mean, just it's amazing just to see – if you haven't been to D.C. or the Washington – the National Mall, it's a huge park, you know, with grass and, you know, you got sidewalks and some benches to sit down. But it's like they set up a solar village of 21 houses. Overnight, and these were all off-the-grid houses. They would have everything that a normal house would, and it was a contest. They had 10 events that they had to get through. So with air conditioning, washer, dryer, cooking meals, the whole nine yards that would take place, it was, and then I know Germany won like 2 years in a row. I mean, because they only have it. I think they only have it, or at least back then. I haven't been associated with it for a while. They would have a event every other year, but now I understand it's gone global. I mean, they got Solar Decathlon in Europe. I know they have something in China and some other places. But anyway, they would set up this off-the-grid village. And I look at that's how that type of innovation, it's on its way. Now, you have people that live in the real world that they, because a lot of those houses cost a lot of money, but, you know, to put together. But, I mean, there's a bunch of YouTube videos that, you know, you can save a whole lot of money. You know, you don't have to, they had to put in a lot of sponsors. They got a lot of donation money and all that other stuff. I'm saying all that to say this. Go ahead, Nicholas.
Go ahead,
Nicholas. Now, I was coming to you anyway because you mentioned that you were with Arizona State. So I was wondering, matter of fact, has Arizona State ever been in the decathlon to your knowledge?
Not to that one. I know we have other engineering decathlons that we – I think we do because one of the other teams in the entrepreneurship program was a solar panel team, and I think I heard them talking about it. But mm-hmm. I'm adding it to my search. I never actually looked it up. What I thought was really that's where my project was through the master's program was on how to do localized, efficient, affordable, flexible, renewable energy.
Right.
That's what I want to be working on. That's why I want to solidify. That's why I love Carlos, and that's why I talked to him before we even got on his project 100%. And I still hope to go back to it, but we do need flexible, cheap, localized, renewable energy. And I think that's, besides housing, food, and water, that's the next challenge.
You're right. Carlos, now you have a clubhouse room. So you or Chris, what is clubhouse number one? And the second thing is, tell us about the room, the project, and where we can show up this weekend for that.
Yeah, I want to make sure our branding is correct. You know, Dream Habitat is partnered with HOPE, which is incredible. So all the webinars going forward are going to, you know, be pointing that out. And this Sunday's seminar is on the clubhouse for the Dream Habitat group. And you know what? I think if I can rename the group, I think I'm going to rename it Dream Habitat HOPE or something like that if it's possible. Or I'll just start another group maybe. But anyway, this Sunday at noon, every Sunday at noon, we're having a clubhouse room where I try to teach the community something related to sustainable living. And at the end, we also talk about the project. You know, we're trying to we're going to be fundraising for the Dream Habitat Hope Project. So, you know, part of the room is we cover some of the perks that we're offering for people that want to help on the project. And we haven't even started the Kickstarter yet, and we've already sold one piece of art and one mini greenhouse that grows mushrooms and microgreens. And these are perks, you know, people that want to help with the project, they donate, and in exchange for their donation, we send them a perk. And the perks include, you know, like the smallest thing is the miniature greenhouse that grows microgreens and mushrooms. It's really well suited for people on fixed incomes or college students. You know, somebody that wants to save a little bit of money on groceries and mushrooms, by the way, are $10 to $15 a pound. So, you know, that thing will pay for itself eventually and probably fairly quickly if you use it quite a bit. So that's, you know, so we have all these different perks that we're going to be rolling out. I just had the Kickstarter videos filmed in my greenhouse yesterday. My good friend who's a photographer, Doug Sanford, who's also going to be contributing art, he's going to be selling his photographs and a portion of the sales are going to go to this project. He came over yesterday and we filmed inside of my greenhouse some video clips that are going to go on the Kickstarter video. And what we're doing is we have artists that have agreed, artists, DJs, you know, creators that have agreed to give us a portion of their sales towards the Dream Habitat Hope Project. And, you know, we haven't even started. We've already got a couple of DJs and several artists that have already committed to giving us a percentage of their sales to help the Dream Habitat Project. And of course, we promote the artists. You know, this is a win-win situation. We want to help artists, and at the same time, the artists want to help us, and I'll tell you why. The artists and the DJs, that community, they have a very close connection to homelessness because many of them have been homeless. As you know, being an artist or a DJ, you know, it's a tough road. You know, it's not the easy, it's a path of passion. You know, it's not a path of money usually. So I think this is the reason why so many artists and DJs are so interested in helping. I believe it's because they really understand the problem, you know, because a lot of them have been homeless and have struggled. So yeah, that's going to be this Sunday, every Sunday at noon. This Sunday, I'm going to be covering my own personal meditation and gratitude practices. I've been doing meditation, breath work, and gratitude practice now for, gosh, I think I'm going on 2 years or so. And I thought I would share the health benefits that I've attained from, you know, mental health and physical health benefits that I've attained from, you know, yoga, meditation, and that sort of stuff. And then, you know, all these shows are recorded. And they do have presentations, you know, PDF files that you can download. So if you follow me on Clubhouse, you will see all the rooms that I had before. And I've recorded already a bunch of rooms. Like I recorded a room called DIY Greenhouse for Growing Fish, Plants, and Mushrooms. And in that one, I go over the design in my backyard, the 10 by 20 carport version that I built. I did another one the other day where I went over the commercial version, you know, the fancier version, you know, for somebody that can afford an addition in their backyard or something like that. That was a show that I did recently. I did another show on the mini greenhouse and how to build it and how it works. And this Sunday I will be covering breathwork meditation. And I'll probably also cover, you know, something about the greenhouses and, you know, I'll also provide people access to those other channels if they have trouble finding them, you know, the recordings. So that's the plan for this Sunday. Thank you for letting me talk about that.
And Chris, what's on the agenda for Tiny House? I know you're doing a collab with Carlos, and I got to get back to you on our collab. But for people that want to collaborate with you on Tiny Houses, what can they do?
Well, they can call. My phone number is 309-542-6319. And my website You don't have to use the www. It's one of the HTTP ones. But you just write in hopeforhousing.com or hopeforhousing.org. And we build shipping container homes as well. And we've got another shipping that we want to do. But we do build those. I have a model in Miami right now that I hope to be able to display. And Art Basel during the, I think it's through the first through the third, but I am doing a keynote speaking event there, and Carlos will be with me. This is where we want to show people's art as well. That's why the artists are getting involved. But, you know, people can reach out, and I don't care where you are. You know, we want to do these workshops, or we'll come to your city, we'll come to your town, and actually change a life while we're there, but it won't be a lot of talking. It'll be more talking after we're done. Enjoying what we see and knowing what we've done is going to give someone else joy. But it is winter, and I'm not scared to show up in the winter because I know that that's somebody's life that's being saved. And I think that's what we need to be thinking about, is how we survive every day. There's people out there that's not. And my phone don't stop ringing. I've already had 3 phone calls from 3 homeless people since I started talking, and I've got another one calling me right now. So it never ends for me, but I don't care where you are. If you guys want to do something, if you own land, if you want to get income coming in, I'm willing to give you the ABC 123 way of doing this. We will help you stand it up. We will make this thing happen. We can build it for you. But it's more about let's do something. And I appreciate this podcast because we're able to have open discussions about anything. My main thing is what I want is to make sure that nobody's need is not being met, because as soon as it is, then everybody gets what they want. That is equality to me.
Artists are some interesting people. They can see the invisible. The challenge for me, at least, is I know of one guy, brilliant artist, and he's a carpenter, too. Oh, a woodworker, at least. And but catching them is like catching the wind almost. Any suggestions on how to deal with the creative, very creative type?
Any suggestions on how to
deal with it? Yeah, because, yeah, like I say, many artists are brilliant people, and they can really, they can see the invisible. They're architects, but
yes,
just trying to nail them down. Because I know of one guy, he, you know, I got a place for him to stay. But I haven't been able to catch that guy for like 3 or 4 months. His phone, all I know is his phone's still on, that's all.
I got to say, Carlos said, you can't really nail him down, but you can kind of give him the direction to sail and float to.
Right. Okay, well, I guess that you're right. There were 4 or 5 years ago. There was 2 other young ladies that were, I guess they were, one was more of an artist than the other one. They were both artists. But what I learned from that lesson is you sort of got to walk on eggshells with them, with some artists. Because some of them might be divas. So you got to allow people their space to be themselves and find a middle ground. But artists, it's amazing how they can look at what a normal person would see as a desert. I'm sure whoever made up, you know, when they put together Reno, Nevada or Las Vegas, I'm sure somewhere in the lineup they had artists that can actually see a community built in a desert. So,
you know, a lot of the people that are there are actually on the spectrum. You know, I learned later in life that I'm ADHD. I'm self-diagnosed, mm-hmm. but I know I am because I've measured my brain waves. I'm also a scientist, so I can, you know, read articles and figure out. But yeah, I learned later in life that my entire life I've been living with ADHD untreated. I don't take any chemicals for it. But it also explains something. In fact, for the people out there that are ADHD, it's about 20% of the world population, by the way. And it's the visionaries, the people that have ADHD, they're the ones that are, you know, when I was a kid, my teachers always said, hey, Carlos, it seems like your heads are in the clouds. They are. I'm constantly dreaming. I'm constantly thinking about, I can picture greening Africa, and I know how to do it. You know, it's not that complicated. You know, I can picture people growing food in their backyards. It's not that complicated. So I'm constantly, you know, constantly dreaming and thinking and inventing, and it's just my nature. If you're one of those people, I was on Clubhouse one day, and somebody said to me, he goes, oh, you're ADHD. And I said, yeah, I think so. And he said, yeah, I can tell by the way you think and the way you interrupt people. ADHD people interrupt you not because they're being rude. It's because their thoughts will escape them very quickly. Like if I don't get my thought out immediately, it'll get covered by 1,000 other thoughts, you know, other inventions or whatever. So there's a book that somebody recommended called The Da Vinci Method. And it's about people that are like me, you know, and apparently Da Vinci was supposedly ADHD or neurodivergent. And we're the ones that are creating everything and we can't help it. You know, I'm just constantly inventing and thinking, and that's what I love to do. And the stuff that I don't love to do, I procrastinate on. You know, as my wife is reminding me, I've been spending so much time on this, you know, Dream Habitat Hope project that I've been neglecting my duties, you know, as a patent attorney with work that I have on the table, you know. So that's one of our problems with ADHD is that we're either on or off. You know, we're either in it 110% or we're out of it.
I think people, those labels, ADHD, I think, with the people who come up with those titles and all that,
bullshit.
People like yourself who are visionary, you're vibing at a higher rate that whoever came up with that label, they haven't. In life, they're architects and they're bricklayers. And a bricklayer cannot see the vision of an architect. You need bricklayers. I'm not knocking bricklayers, but bricklayers just don't. They don't see the invisible. It's as simple as that.
Right.
Right. And they're typically vibing at least the way I'm interpreting it. They're vibrating at a higher rate where it basically it's best not even to share your ideas because they'll shoot it down. You know, if you all this negativity and all that is. One thing I learned, at least the way I'm processing it, the creator, God, Allah, Jehovah, Buddha, whatever you want to call it, never shared an idea or a vision with a committee.
Yeah.
And if you can live with that idea, take that idea, as crazy as it might sound, and just run with it. And it'll work out.
I think that's good advice because, I mean, think about that. If I had listened to the mushroom experts, right, a committee, I never would have done what I did.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. You're 100% right. You know, often, and you know, also, you can learn from mistakes. You know, you can sit there and analyze something for 55 years and never execute, right? And never learn anything. Well, you learn, you know, you analyze it or whatever, but, you know, building it, you know, with the way I like to operate, I analyze. Once I'm done analyzing, I plan. Once I'm done planning, I execute. And I don't go back and analyze again. You know what I'm saying? In other words, I compartmentalize it. And this is how you learn, because you get to a design quickly. You know, like I heard about aquaponics in December. My system was built in March of the next year. I had friends that were telling me, I've been researching aquaponics for 5 years now. I'm like, okay, what did you build? Nothing. And this is what I love about Brother Chris. You know, he is taking freaking action. I want to take action. I'm sick of the talk. You know, everybody's talking. Oh, we want to help. Oh, we want to help Mother Earth. Oh, you know, all this talk, right? We need action is what we need right now. And that's what I love about Brother Chris. He is a man of action. Like you said, he took three, he's probably on 5 or 6 calls by now from homeless people right now. You know, that man is taking action, and that's the type of person I want to be. Well, I'm honored to be partnered with him. But, you know, I've got the problem, right? The problem is this, you know, you get caught in the rut, or whatever you would call it, the machine. You know, I have a family. I have a mortgage. I'm running a law firm. You know, I've got all these responsibilities that keep me sort of tied to what I'm doing, where what I really want to be doing, you know, if I didn't have a family and a house and all that stuff, I'd be with Brother Chris on the ground, you know, with his help, with the search and rescue team, or, you know, building tiny homes or whatever. And I'm just praying and hoping, you know, that I will get in a position where I can pursue my passion, you know, and my passion is to bring this technology all over the world to help the people that need it, you know. So I'm going to pray and hope that, you know, things change.
You got an industry where you have a niche industry, so basically you don't have any competition. Anybody out there who's listening, 619-768-2945, press 1 and then raise your hand if you have any questions to ask Nicholas Ledbetter, Carlos Villamar, or Chris Collins. They're here. You can ask them directly. Press 1 if you're already in the queue.
What is your name? How,
I got
how
a
do
long
I address
name.
You? Oh, do you? I try to pronounce it.
All right. The name,
how
all right, the clubhouse. I have a long name, which it's a long story behind it. Well, not actually a long story. But, you know, on Clubhouse, Vauban Schwarzwald, and let me explain let me explain that name. One of my favorite places on the planet is a village of about 5,000 or 6,000 people in the Freiburg district, in Freiburg, Germany, called Vauban. There's a Wikipedia page on it, and I spent the day there, took a number of videos that I posted up on YouTube. I'll post them up on Facebook page over the weekend, and I'll announce it next week. But Vauban is, once again, it's a little village in Freiburg, Germany. And it's a solar district, and you're not allowed to drive a gas-driven car within Vauban. They have a solar garage there where you park your car, and on the top of the garage is a rack of solar panels, which helps generate electricity for the community. You might hear or see an electric car go through there. And Vauban has various neighborhoods where in each neighborhood, the neighbors get together in that particular section of Vauban, and they have meals, community meals. But it's a community where it's a net zero energy community, at least last time I was there. So people have low or no utility bills at all, and they live a normal lifestyle other than there's no gas-powered communities there. So that's role model. Once again, VAU, BAN is not too far from France or Switzerland. It's right outside the Schwarzwald, or Schwarzwald, which is Deutsch or German for the Black Forest. So
right.
Thus, that's the name Vauban Schwarzwald.
That is an incredible, that's better than my OU812 story.
But one
that.
Of
my
favorite
German,
places, yeah, one of my favorite places on the planet. So a lot of the things that I learned about renewable energy and sustainability, it came from, you know, my travels in Europe.
Were you military?
I mostly stayed in Germany, though. And,
were you military?
No, never in the military. And so I said, well, you know, a lot of the things that I see over here, you know, you can put away. A lot of the things that I saw there, I haven't seen over here in the United States yet. As far as there's one place I ran into in West Virginia, and there are probably a gazillion other places, but I've only run into one place, and that was in West Virginia, that had sort of a, they weren't totally off the grid, but, I mean, they have electric cars there. They have cars that run off of biofuels. Now, what the particular biofuels that some of their cars run off of, or their automobiles run off of, would be vegetable oil. So they'll go into town, and they'll go to, you know, the Chinese, any restaurant that they say, look, instead of disposing of that oil, give it to us, and then they do whatever they do to it. So you have cars running out here off of vegetable oil or used vegetable oil. I don't know the whole process of that, but they have a processing plant. So this type of stuff, well, like you said, there are people right now in their garages, backyards, or whatever that they're going to, I mean, it's amazing what happens out here. And I like the rural areas because the giants of today, a few short years ago, was in somebody's backyard, on somebody's kitchen table in somebody's garage. Jeff Bezos, he was selling books and shoes out of his house or apartment or whatever he had. Walmarts, the majority of Walmarts are in rural America, and they started in Bentonville, Arkansas. Bentonville, Arkansas. Steve Jobs, I mean, you name it, Michael Dell, he started out of his old apartment. So it's somebody on here, somebody that has spoken, somebody that hasn't expressed one, somebody has some type of intellectual property that once they learn how to protect it and then execute it, you know, who knows? I mean, last Thursday, we had three young ladies on who they're building their own town. It started with them. They ran across some land in Georgia. And if they live in Metro Atlanta right now, it's three of them. And they say, well, you know what? You call 10 friends. So between the three of them, they called 30 friends. They came up with 19 families. They bought 97 acres of land. Now they're up to 502 acres of land, and they're building their own town. Three black women. So it's, like I said, everybody's got an idea. This is what, you know, what are you going to do with it? So in any event, let's see. Let's go. All right, once again, if you got any questions, these guys, 619-768-2945, or just press 1. Yes?
You've got all that property let's build, you know, if you look at, we have a design for a tiny home or a big home, if you want. It's sort of like a ski chalet sort of design, so it's got the open beams, you know, which could actually be made from Mr. Collins' metal, you know, because I was thinking along his same lines. Metal is incredible, you know, because it lasts for so long, can be recycled a million times. You know, when you're ready, this is what we're going to be doing with our greenhouses, our commercial ones. You know, there's different lines, right? There's the commercial line, and then of course there's the mission line, which is with me and Chris, you know, feeding the homeless, et cetera. But we do have a design for something that people could put in their backyard that looks architecturally beautiful and also grows fish plants and mushrooms for the homeowner. So what we want to do is, since these greenhouses or these houses are specific to your area, they're like custom designed for your latitude, what we want to do is partner with people that want to build them on their property, right? And we help build them. Right. And then they become a franchise owner of that model in their neighborhood. And then they can make money by selling that model in their neighborhood. And of course we would want to fairly share in the profit. And by the way, everything I do is based around fairness to all parties. I like win-win-wins on all situations. None of this, you know, zero sum, right?
Well, you've got a dollar in the profit, so I want it. Right, we can powwow on that because I got raw land in three states, Florida, Oklahoma, and Texas. And I've got some seeds now. The seeds, I got four packs of seeds that came courtesy of one of our regulars here, Connie Beasley, and he donated a pack of watermelon, tomato, okra, and honeydew melon.
Nice.
So we've got that, so we can. I'm all ears. You know, we can talk offline on that. And,
yeah, we should talk. And no pressure,
and,
by the way.
And get that
Everything
going.
I do is voluntary.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get that going, so we can get some momentum going into 2023. Now, once again, for the people that are listening, if you got any questions to ask, we're in the overtime now. Press one now, forever hold your peace, or catch us next week. It's up to you. Now, that you have the Sunday session. Do you have anything going on Clubhouse throughout the week?
Brother Chris is talking about starting a 24/7 Hope Dream Habitat channel that's just constantly running 24/7 worldwide on Clubhouse, so that we can start addressing you know, people that need help or people that want to help, you know, because we need both, right? The people that need help, and then we need the people that want to help to help. So I'm going to work with Brother Chris on – he may already have it. I don't know, Chris, did you already set that up, or do we need to work on that?
No, we still need to set it up.
Okay. We want
that's
to set it 24/7.
That's an idea. Yeah, that's an excellent idea, and I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why I like Clubhouse. All right, right now we're live streaming on Blog Talk. So Blog Talk, at least on the plan that I have, you know, it gives us 2 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, on a monthly basis. And then we can go overtime for like 50 minutes. So, you know, we're in overtime right now, but that's okay. But it's not a whole lot of money, because I used to buy advertising on, you know, terrestrial AM and FM stations, which I would pay anywhere from $150 to $400 per hour. So I pay a fraction of that here on Blog Talk. However, with radio, it's regulated by the FCC. Now, what we're talking about here on Clubhouse, excuse me, on Blog Talk Radio, it's virtually unregulated, Okay, you can basically say anything you want to say, use any kind of language you want to use. But I like Clubhouse better because, now, this is for the visionaries. Number one, Clubhouse for right now is 100% free. Number two, there's no limit on how long you can carry on a conversation. There are people that carry on conversations for days on Clubhouse. I've been in on conversations where they last 2 or 3 hours. I go to sleep, I wake up, and they're still having the same conversation. So there's no limit on how long you can. They call them rooms on Clubhouse. And once again, Clubhouse is the wild, wild west right now. So before it gets regulated, that's why I love Clubhouse. So you can have, what Chris is talking about is you can set up a de facto radio station, because I'm speaking to you guys on the smartphone right now. The smartphone or the cell phone is it's the new transistor radio. Practically everybody has them, no matter what your socioeconomic status is. You can be somebody on the Serengeti in Africa has got a smartphone. So, you can set it up any kind of way you want to. Yes, yes, Carlos.
I should mention, right now I'm broadcasting this show on Clubhouse in my house lounge. So if somebody right now could go in a Dream Habitat house, if they're in, you know, the houses you have to be invited to, but I could set this show up as a room that occurs every single day at 10:30, right?
Right.
And as you're running it right here, it could be broadcast. I have a computer downstairs in my basement, right, that is running Clubhouse right now and is playing. I dialed in using Google Voice into this channel, right? And I'm playing it through my computer and playing that into Clubhouse through my little bot that I've got running in my lounge. It's not really a bot. It's just my computer in the basement. And I use it to play music in the lounge. And what I've been doing is every morning before the show, I go on Google Voice, I dial in, and I send the audio to the lounge. So right now, everything we're saying is being transmitted in the lounge. It's not being recorded because the lounge doesn't let you record. However, you could set up a room, you know, or I could set up a room, whatever you want. I'm here to help. Where now we broadcast your show live on Blog Talk, but at the same time it's simulcast on Clubhouse and recorded on Clubhouse, so that now you have a whole nother way of getting to people, you know, besides the people that listen to Blog Talk Radio and that aren't on Clubhouse. Now you're going to have the intersection of that plus Clubhouse. So I thought I'd mention that to you, that I just figured this out recently since I got on the show, that it's possible, because I wanted to run music in the lounge, you know, because the lounge is a place where people can just go and hang out. So I've been running some like meditation music in there, you know. Right now, this show is being broadcast live in the lounge of Dream Habitat on Clubhouse, not being recorded. And that's why I asked you the other day if you would mind if I recorded it. And you
I don't mind. We record all of ours anyway. Right. But what I like about Clubhouse, it's the Wild West, and it's Clubhouse is an audio app. There are other audio apps out there like Breakout and Wisdom, but Clubhouse, at least of the audio apps that I'm aware of, is right now the king of the hill. And like I said, you can set up Chris's vision, set up a 24-hour information outlet, if you want to call it that. Clubhouse is the place to do it. Because if you went out, put it this way, why on a radio station? Well, you got to pay an engineer, you got to pay tower fees, you know, the FCC license fees, you got to pay staff and all that. Well, audio apps are the way to go. So,
Anyway, you've been doing this for how many years? How many years?
I've been doing on Blog Talk, on Blog this particular podcast, It's Miles, for next month on December 24th, Christmas Eve will be 9 consecutive years.
Wow.
The way I want to go for 2023 is I want to start doing stuff offline where we're like all of the projects that you were talking about, where we get together in person in somebody's backyard or wherever we can meet locally, and we actually do projects. Because when you meet people face-to-face, when you break bread with people face-to-face, whatever you're doing, whatever you're putting out there, in my opinion, accelerates to the nth degree. You know, it's only so far you can do. Even if this was visual, but through Zoom or whatever, it helps a little bit, but I think nothing replaces actually being boots on the ground.
And
I'm listening.
It's because, you know, we want to trust people, and you can only get to a certain level of trust through social media. You know, I could be a bot. I could be a total imposter, and there's nothing that stops people from doing that and, in fact, exploiting that. However, when you're boots on the ground and you're actually giving a seminar on growing mushrooms and plants and you've got the mini greenhouse there and you're showing people, they can tell that you're authentic. You know, some people say that by my voice they can feel my passion, and I've been told that quite a bit, you know, that I'm a very passionate speaker. And it's true because, you know, I am passionate. But, you know, actually meeting somebody, like you said, in real life, it's intuition. You know, we have this intuition that you can only get when you're right there next to the person. You've heard this, right? That person is giving me bad vibes. You've heard that term?
Right.
We're realizing that this is legit stuff, that we humans actually can sense vibrations from other humans. This used to be all hippie wah-wah stuff back in the day, right? But now science is figuring out that it's true. We are all connected. We do put out vibrations. Gratitude is the best attitude. You can choose to have a good day or not, irrespective of your circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to have a good day because you're breathing. You're alive. You know, that's gratitude. And we just need to start helping the people that really need it. You know, like what Brother Chris is doing and what you're doing. You know, we need more humans like this. We need more humans like this.
Well,
so
the meaning,
that
reminds me of the ladies that won last Thursday, last week. How did they go from zero to 502 acres in about 18 months? They met. They do tours. I mean, they sent out emails. They didn't even do Zoom at first. They do Zoom now. But they sent out emails, and then they met people face-to-face, boots on the ground in Atlanta, the locals, and then they took a two-hour drive every week to where this land is. So that's how they got their first 97 acres. Now they're up to 502. And it's the glue to it all, in my opinion, they met face-to-face. I mean, they've had campouts at this place a few times, and now they do events there. So it's like, you know, we have events sponsored where we come together, and you know, some of the stuff that you guys have talked about, you know, get together with Chris, all of us, and do a tiny house weekend. Actually built one. I talk about it, as Chris said. As Chris said, there'll be some talking, but there'll be more building. Here's one of my, I don't know if you guys ever saw the TV show Pimp My Ride. I would like to see we get a homeless person. Of course, you got to vet a homeless person, but get somebody that, put it this way, that's in need, and they help build one of these greenhouses that you know, just the way that he's described it on here. And that would attract, I mean, I think that'll be the ultimate marketing. If you just see somebody that had no experience participate in building the greenhouse or whatever structure you call it. So,
and we got that coming up because I have producers, directors, and, you know, a lot of filmmakers that are wanting to start doing documentaries on everything that we're doing. So everybody across this country, that challenge of doing these workshops, you're actually going to be able to be seen. You'll be able to know what you've done. You can always look back at it, refer to it, share it, because it'll run on there 24 hours a day. But they are ready to do this. All we need is to start the bookings. And it doesn't matter about it being cold. Find a building inside to do it in.
Right. Now, I'm putting a call to action out to anybody listening. I'm looking for 10 backyards. If you have a backyard, whoever's listening, if you got a backyard, if you know somebody who has a backyard and will allow us to use it, or if you're in a colder climate, we'll find something. But 10 people, and just reach out to me. My number is 425-520-0605. Or you can go to our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV. Just go to It's My House TV on Facebook and just drop a message, and I'll get right back to you. So, Chris,
I know
Mr. Ledbetter, Nicholas.
So I know Carlos knows this, but part of one of my best friends and somebody that's on the team, veteran as well, he's already told me we can use his backyard as a testing ground and use his pool for any aquaponics experiments. And he's got a whole workshop.
Now, what neck of the woods is he in? Arizona?
Yeah, he's in Mesa, Arizona.
Okay, great. And you're already boots on the ground there. So anyway,
location, by the way, Arizona is perfect for these greenhouses.
All right. Well, all right. Since there were no more questions or people, I guess people in note taking mode today, because there's plenty of people on the switchboard. Thank you guys for being on. You can come on next week as well. This is an open forum for you. And since we're going to be doing stuff off the ground, they'll be on here more regularly. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day and terrific weekend.